Welcome to the Confluence of Ideas from Confluence Investment Management. I'm Phil Adler. The financial markets remained volatile during the second quarter of 2025, creating a challenging environment as the Confluence Asset Allocation Committee met, as it does every quarter, to consider changes in the investment mix for the firm's five model portfolios. As a reminder to our listeners, the Confluence investment models, all with a focus on risk management, exist along the risk spectrum. They are income, income with growth, growth and income, growth and aggressive growth. These portfolios are managed by a committee that includes professionals from across the firm. Our guest today to discuss the firm's third quarter asset allocation outlook is the chair of the committee, Kajsa Sturkey. Kajsa, 3 months ago when we talked, the committee anticipated a recessionary environment occurring sometime during your three-year investment window. And the reasons included slowing momentum in certain leading economic indicators, even before tariffs were rolled out. Added to that were the tariffs themselves and a lack of clarity around them that made it difficult for firms to commit to capital spending. This caution about a possible recession formed the basis for your allocation recommendations. Now, the committee is saying that the likelihood of a recession during the next 3 years has declined. What has changed exactly?
Thanks for having me, Phil. A few key dynamics have shifted. While many of the concerns, like persistent trade ambiguity and cautious business sentiment, remain, we've seen stronger than expected fiscal support emerge. The continuation of tax cut extensions, new industrial policies, and global spending on infrastructure and defense, particularly in Europe, have improved the backdrop. Now, importantly, markets have shown resilience to negative headlines, suggesting that sentiment is adjusting rather than deteriorating. So the big changes in economic narrative quarter over quarter are fiscal support and a more muted market reaction to uncertainty.
It still seems to me that many of the uninspiring economic conditions which led to the cautious second quarter outlook remain, at least to some extent. Can you share with us recent outstanding reports that present a more affirming picture?
Yes, we continue to see below trend growth, but we're also seeing stabilization. The ISM services PMI remains above 50, which tells us the services sector is still expanding. Additionally, real GDP year over year has grown by 2%. And even though Q1 showed a small contraction quarter over quarter, the broader picture supports a soft landing rather than a downturn.
And I guess to emphasize a point you just made, would you say it is the market's surprising response to the challenging environment 3 months ago that's been a deciding factor in your upgraded outlook?
You know, I would say the most significant factors came from our deep economic analysis as well as growth forecasts. But the market reaction that you're talking about, or the investor psychology, so to speak, does have an effect on expected future outcomes, whether it's through valuation or sentiment impact. And what we've seen is market behavior normalization in the face of macro and geopolitical pressures. Volatility has come down, and we saw sharp rebounds in domestic and international equities. That tells us that the environment isn't as fragile as we feared. But again, uncertainty still lingers in the system.
Now, as we try to imagine how the economy might behave in the months ahead, can we anticipate a gradual decline in interest rates?
Yeah, we think that rates are likely to remain stable in the near term, especially with the inflation still uneven. We anticipate a gradual decline beginning in 2026 when there's a change in Fed leadership. The policy outlook suggests we could see a normalization in the yield curve, offering real returns in fixed income over the forecast period of 3 years.
a decline in interest rates can stimulate economic growth and can be good news for borrowers. But is it possible that this time around, because of the growth in U.S. debt, that a gradual decline in the federal fund rate set by the Federal Reserve may not trigger a corresponding decline in borrowing costs for homeowners and consumers?
Yeah, that's a great point. The rising national debt could put upward pressure on longer-term yields, especially if market confidence is shaken. Even if the Fed lowers the federal funds rate, mortgage and consumer loan rates might not decline in lockstep. We're watching credit markets and bond issuance closely, especially in the light of large upcoming corporate refinancing needs.
The move to invest in European stocks, particularly defense stocks, has been a very winning formula over the past months. Are European stock valuations still attractive?
They are. Europe remains a standout in terms of relative valuation. And in addition to that, the fiscal landscape is changing in Europe. Significant government spending, particularly through defense and infrastructure, as well as recovery funds, is driving investment. These dynamics, now combined with easing regulations, make the region more attractive than it's been in years.
Are you, Kaisa, counting on a declining dollar to elevate the attractiveness of European stocks for U.S. investors?
Yes, absolutely. Declining dollar enhances the return potential of foreign assets for the U.S. investors. We do expect the dollar to weaken due to structural policy shifts and macroeconomic trends, and this will further support the international exposure.
Well, let's look at some of the committee's specific changes in model recommendations entering the third quarter. You've reduced allocations to intermediate-term bonds in the three most conservative models. What makes these bonds less attractive in these three portfolios relative to both short-term and speculative-grade bonds?
You're right, Phil. Intermediate-term bonds have lost some appeal, mostly due to their interest rate sensitivity. In the income and income with growth portfolios, so the more conservative portfolios, we shifted toward a barbell strategy, combining short-term bonds for flexibility and long-term bonds for yield. So risk-adjusted returns didn't justify keeping intermediate exposure. But I will add, sector and credit-wise, we find attractive opportunities, especially in the MBS and short treasury markets.
We've already talked a bit about the attractiveness of European stocks, and in your portfolios, you've raised allocations to international developed market stocks. In fact, in all five portfolios right across the board. Now, within this group, what stands out and how have you targeted it?
That's right. In addition to a broad developed market exposure, we've targeted Europe and international small cap value. We briefly touched on Europe already. We talked about the valuations. In addition to valuations, strong fiscal stimulus is supporting the region. We mentioned the defense and the infrastructure. This will help to drive growth. We're also seeing a meaningful shift in capital flows into Europe, as the global investors look to diversify and take advantage of a weakening dollar. On the other hand, let's talk about international small cap value names. The small cap names tend to be more insulated from global trade disruptions and directly benefit from local fiscal spending. We're seeing both of those things. They're also heavily exposed to sectors like industrials and materials, which should do well under Europe's infrastructure and defense stimulus. And from a valuation and profitability standpoint, they screen attractively.
Kaisa, just a couple of more questions. First, among large cap stocks, you favor dividends in the more conservative portfolios. I've read that quality dividend payers are harder to find as companies engage in stock buybacks instead. Is it getting harder to find dividend paying stocks that add real value?
So I will answer this question, but first, there are a couple of moving pieces for a domestic large cap. With recession risks receding, we move to an even weight growth value position to better capture upside potential while managing valuation risk. Additionally, we also maintained our allocation to defense technology, which, as we talked about, continues to benefit from elevated geopolitical tensions as well as sustained government investment. But because uncertainty is still elevated, we kept our allocation in dividend-paying stocks. In a more volatile environment, dividends provide a reliable income stream and have a stabilizing effect. Now, it is important to remember that asset allocation portfolios do not pick individual stocks, but rather we seek targeted ETFs for the exposure.
Large cap domestic stocks remain a healthy component in all five model portfolios. Is the consensus that's been driving gains in domestic large cap stocks in any danger of eroding?
You know, this is a nuanced market. Flows into passive strategies continue to support large caps. And policy incentives like immediate R&D expensing from the One Big Beautiful Bill should enhance long-term growth potential. But while valuations are elevated for a concentrated group of stocks, valuation expansion opportunity remains in many others.
Your allocations to commodities anchored by gold are unchanged in the five portfolios. Is gold likely to maintain its strength even if economic conditions stabilize?
Yes, absolutely. Gold remains strategically important across all the strategies. Central banks continue to accumulate it, and with geopolitical tensions and a global trend to diversify reserves away from the US dollar, we see demand staying robust. It's an important diversifier and a hedge, regardless of the macro backdrop.
Final question. Although all five of your portfolios have generated positive returns over the past 3 years, your model most exposed to risk, that's the aggressive growth model, has underperformed expectations. Has this underperformance caused you to reevaluate your approach?
You are right, and this is something that we think about all the time. While its relative performance has lagged, aggressive growth delivered positive returns. So the volatility in small and mid-cap domestic stocks, as well as international equities, weighed on the results. But our structured risk budgeting approach remains sound. The strategy is doing what it's designed to do. Seek higher returns by embracing higher volatility. Keep in mind, these are expected returns and expected volatility. The concentrated rally in domestic large caps, driven by tech stocks, has limited broader participation. But looking ahead, we're closely watching for signs of broadening market leadership, which could create a more favorable environment for the diversified exposures within the strategy.
Thank you, Kaisa. If our listeners would like to read the detailed third quarter 2025 Asset Allocation Outlook report and see all the changes in viewer-friendly charts, that's very easy to do. Just access confluenceinvestment.com. There you'll find a tab for the Asset Allocation Quarterly on the top right. Our discussion today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. And this information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.